Why, yes, it is a Thursday. It's time to talk to the voice of the KU Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency. And Brian, no game here in the middle of the week, and KU coming off the emotional, fun win over their rival, the Missouri Tigers. Always a fun time when you can knock off your hated rival that dates all the way back to the Civil War, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That was certainly a special Saturday when you added the Thomas Robinson jersey retirement. But while the game itself required a 20-2 run late in the first half to really seize control, it wasn't the overall domination that you'd seen the previous 2 years when KU had won by an average of 33 points a game. Still, great day. I think, you know, if you talk to Bill about it, he didn't sense his guys were quite as up for the Mizzou game as the previous weekend versus UConn. He also sensed they might have been playing a little tight with a little bit of pressure because there was such an expectation for a blowout based on the previous two meetings, and everybody wanted it so bad for T-Rob. It's kind of hard to, you know, get up to that emotional energy level so many times week in and week out. When you think about how many times in the first 10 games of the season KU's been asked to do that, going to Chicago to take on Kentucky, playing two top 10 teams in Honolulu, in Marquette and Tennessee, defending national champs UConn, here comes Missouri. You're not going to play to that optimal level each time, and you're not going to be able to draw that much emotional energy every single time. And so they were at times a little bit flat. They fell down 15-6 early. But like you said, you know, anytime you get a chance to beat your rival, no matter what it looks like, you know, Coach likes to say after a win that's maybe a smaller margin, he'll say, well, that wasn't very artistic. You know, and yet he'll say, we're never going to apologize for beating Missouri no matter how it looks in terms of the margin of victory. And that's kind of what Saturday was. But as he told me last night, you know, 10 times a year in a 35 or 40 game season, you're not going to have your best, you know, optimal crispness in terms of offensive flow or shots falling or whatever. And if you can find a way on those nights, just based on your own toughness, your own defensive intensity, forcing the opponent to look worse than you do, if you can find a way in 7 of those 10 non-optimal days to play good enough to win and go 7-3 in your 10 down days, he said, then you're going to have a really special year. And he put Saturday's game in that category. So great to get that win over a Missouri team that could compete to go to the NCAA tournament. And we certainly took care of business, even though it wasn't our A effort.
Well, that's how good they are, no doubt. Ranked second in the country, and that's a big reason why. Now, you and I have talked about this, and I think this is going to be an ongoing theme throughout the year until something obviously changes. But when you look at the box score, and you watch the game too, but even if you don't watch the game, you look at the box score, and you see DeJuan Harris played all 40 minutes, Kevin McCullough played 39 of the 40 minutes, KJ Adams played 37, Hunter Dickinson played 35, only 23 total minutes from the bench, and they combined to score 7 points, Parker Brown, Jamari McDowell, Johnny Furphy, and Nick Timberlake. You and I talked about the bench. Obviously, Coach Self would want more contributions from the bench. Not a single guy from the bench played more than 8 minutes. Who is the best candidate to break through off the bench, in your opinion? At some point, they're going to have to get somebody to really contribute off the bench.
Well, Johnny Furphy is the best prospect by far, big picture. Now, he's also a guy that comes in a year early reclassifying to be here and should still be in Australian prep school right now. And so you give him a little bit of a extra leash in terms of how long it may take him to truly settle in. But he's gaining on it pretty quickly. And you certainly see flashes out of Jamari McDowell as well. Obviously, I'm not mentioning Marco Jackson since he's in the starting lineup right now. If anything, you might see Furphy usurp El Marco at some point for starters minutes. But the bench options, as they currently sit, Furphy's got the best chance to help this team go to a Final Four. Nick Timberlake should be that guy. He's the fifth-year senior, the transfer from Towson. There's still real belief that he can give Kansas something. But Bill will tell you, without pulling any punches, he's a guy right now that's just really in his head. And you know, at times, just kind of looks like a fish out of water, not settling in, not comfortable. You know the skill set is there. I mean, he shot 42, almost 43% from three a year ago. He's a tremendous athlete, sneaky athletic, honestly, with his vertical leap and his straight-on speed.
But he's gotten into games, and we've seen flashes of brilliance, and then he'll miss four shots in a row. Or the case the other night, he hit an early three, and then his man scored seven straight points on him in a two-minute stretch, and that was all she wrote for Nick the rest of the way. And so, you know, he's still learning what Bill needs from him on both ends of the floor while also still trying to find belief and confidence in his own game that, you know, that he can be that elite-level scorer and shooter that everybody thought he was when he entered the portal. I mean, this is a guy that was arguably the most coveted shooting guard prospect in the portal last summer, I guess this past summer. And, you know, consequently, they still have high hopes for him. But the deeper you get into the season and the more unsettled he remains with his own confidence and consistency, the more you start to doubt, is he ever going to impact this rotation like they would have hoped? Because I remember talking to you before we went to San Juan, and he was in the starting rotation projection. And we didn't know if it was going to be him, Arterio, or Almarco. But down there in those three games, they rotated three different starting lineups, and he was in one of them. And here we sit 10 games into the year, and he's a long, long ways from where they thought he would be. So don't give up yet. He's a great kid. I think he's got a great work ethic. He's just got to settle in, but also dig in defensively. If he does those two things, he could still make a major mark on this team as well. And the guy I haven't mentioned, because he just kind of gives you the same thing every game, and they're really pleased with what they have right now, is Parker Brown. Two more big blocks versus Mizzou. He's not going to be a guy that comes in and scores 12 or 14 points and grabs nine rebounds unless you had extended run with Hunter out for some reason. But what he does do is he comes in and he gives you energy, he gives you athleticism on the back line, and he takes high percentage shots, doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Really, he has exceeded my expectations, and I think he is, like right now, an A grade in the minds of the coaching staff on what he's delivered based on what they expected. So he is, amongst our transfer guys, you know, one of the more popular choices that's come in and absolutely held up his end of the bargain.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, with us every Thursday on the Ticket, brought to you by our friends at Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them today at 738-5701. All right, so KU has a chance to kind of, I wouldn't say relax, but get prepared for Indiana coming up on Saturday morning in Bloomington, 11:30 tip-off time, 11 o'clock pregame on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Jayhawks in north central Kansas. Thoughts on Indiana? I mean, you know, you and I talked about this last year in regards to blue bloods. You know, Kentucky's a blue blood, Kansas a blue blood, Duke's a blue blood, North Carolina. You probably could still throw UCLA in there. But then there are some people who say Indiana, and then I went through all the numbers. I think I went over it with you when I had you on, and it's like, wow, it's even worse than we initially thought. But still, Indiana is a brand. It's still a name, and Indiana is a team that has talent.
They most definitely do. And are they playing to the talent level, you know, that was expected in the preseason right now? Maybe not quite there yet, but it's a group that expects to get there, and no game would get them up. You talk about emotional energy and all that stuff. No place is going to get their building rocking, and their players just chomping at the bit, other than taking on a number two ranked Kansas team that just throttled them a year ago. And it's, you know, different personnel at a lot of spots in the group that came in here. But it's definitely a team that, you know, they've got a top 15 prospect that they beat us head-to-head on in recruiting at the very last minute. He'll be fired up in this one. I think Coach Woodson does a really good job. And, you know, one of their two losses was to UConn, who was ranked in the top five at the time, and no shame in that, obviously. So I think it's a group that certainly has the capability of beating Kansas. And yet when I talked to their people late last week, a couple of their folks said, you know, we wish we were about 10% better than what we've shown, and you guys are about 10% worse, and then it might come back to the mean a little bit to where, you know, it's a little more even out. And I think that comment speaks to the fact that there's a lot of untapped potential there for Indiana that they haven't quite scratched the surface of just yet. But, I mean, what better setting to dig deep and pull out your best effort than a national televised game with the number two team in the country? And so I really think it's going to be a dogfight on Saturday. I think our guys will be hyped, too. It's our first true road game. We've played all these high-level, top 25, top 10 head-to-heads, but they've been on neutral courts. So I think our guys are pretty pumped about it. And I'm not comparing Assembly Hall to Mizzou, but if you want to go back and compare first road tastes of the year last year to this year, that was a pretty hostile environment. We'll give them credit for it, for sure. And Kansas went in there, and they fed off that opponent crowd energy. They loved keeping a tighter huddle and having an us versus the world mentality, and put together one of the most convincing performances they had all season. So not saying that'll be the case on Saturday necessarily, but I do think there is a competitive spirit amongst our guys that will really enjoy the fact that this is their first road game. Now, obviously we did have an exhibition road game, and we lost that. But you know what? I think that experience helps us. And if anybody on our team, much like the Illinois exhibition trip, knows Indiana well, it's Hunter Dickinson. So he's going to look forward to that as well. So I think good Indiana team that has a chance to be very good. They've not shown it yet. Saturday could be the day. Kansas, obviously, great team, but they've not been tested on the road outside of exhibition play yet. So we want to see what that looks like. So to me, it has all the fixings of a high-level basketball game that truly could go either way.
Yeah, and this past Saturday, I was actually watching some of this. Indiana was up on Auburn 22-10 and in control. That was in Atlanta. Next thing you know, Auburn went on a 30-6 run and destroyed Indiana, scored 104 points, and beat the Hoosiers 104-76. But they, too, had no game during the middle of the week, so they've had a full week to prepare for KU, as KU has had against Indiana. So it should be an interesting ball game. I want to turn our attention to the football team for a moment, because we didn't have time last week to talk to you about I think this news broke after the show. But KU found a new offensive coordinator, Jeff Grimes, coming from Baylor. What can you tell us about this hire? Because I tell you, I look at his bio, I look at his resume, I look at what he's accomplished, what he did at Baylor, what he did with Zach Wilson and BYU. Man, I think this is a heck of a hire for Kansas, at least on paper.
Yeah, on paper it looks really, really good. And I think from a personality and character standpoint, it fits extraordinarily well. I mean, this is a guy who is a lamp light bulb kind of guy. And obviously, when you're coming off an offseason a year ago where nobody left and you had 100% continuity amongst the coaching staff, you want to keep that type of coaching chemistry and relationships. And so, you know, as impressive as his on-field coaching accolades are, fit within the staff is just as important, if not more so. And I think Lance gets both boxes checked here with Coach Grimes. You know, to me, and I don't want this to come across as criticism of Zach Wilson at all, but if you see the Jets' number two overall pick, who right now, by the way, is the reigning offensive player of the week in the AFC,
yes,
but largely has struggled mightily in his career, and you see what he was under Grimes' system at BYU and how much he flourished to the point of being someone that was in the Heisman discussion, someone that was obviously drafted there at number two overall, behind Trevor Wilson, you know, wow. I mean, that's a coaching staff and a scheme and an environment that allowed him to be his true optimal self times 10. And, you know, that doesn't mean that he's going to just do that with everybody, but he was a guy that had great running scheme and passing scheme, great run balance, great consistency week in, week out at BYU. And then his first season at Baylor, they posted some great numbers. I know this past year didn't go the way they wanted, but you look at some of the recent guys he's produced at the pro level. Tyler Algier, who's with the Atlanta Falcons, for example, at running back, working with Bijan Robinson. He's had some really, really productive college players that have flourished in his scheme. And so I think there's a lot to like there. But as I started to say, and fans may yawn at this and think it's not a big deal, but it is, that the fit that he is as an individual within this very special group of KU coaches, I think is maybe as attractive to Lance as anything. And a man of faith, man of just grinding hard work and integrity and toughness and all that, all these attributes, you know, are the types that Lance wants. And he wants to come here and be here for a long time. He's not looking to make a pit stop in Lawrence for a year or two and then move on to the next. He really wants to get entrenched with the special build that's going on right now, which might be a good segue to talk about the Gateway Project. But yeah, he's definitely excited to be a Jayhawk. He was at practice over the weekend on Saturday and already, you know, making notes. And so this is a guy that I think allows Kansas to not have any kind of hiccup whatsoever. And would it look a little bit different? Sure, a little bit. But they want to keep the general themes and trends of what they do offensively pointed in the same direction. And that was important to Lance, too, to not bring in somebody it was going to completely come in and upset the apple cart, reinvent the wheel, whatever cliche you want to put on it, but could allow them to continue to be very multiple and diverse in what they did. A lot of pre-snap you know, reads to throw the defense's way, which might keep them on their toes. It, you know, it has a lot of movement and trickeration. And I'm not saying it's going to be as intricate as maybe it was with Kotelniki, but keep in mind, you've got many of the same offensive minds still in the room, and they've made it very clear they want to continue to be many of the things that they have been. And so I think this is a really natural fit for all those reasons.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a terrific hire for the Jayhawks. Okay, so you mentioned the Gateway Project. I did notice that there you can actually watch the demolition online of what they're going to knock down and then, of course, build there at the football stadium. I mean, now listen, I have to admit, I got to be pretty bored to stare there and watch that step by step. But I must say, if you could put it on fast forward and let me see it knocked down and surmise it into a few minutes, that I would watch.
I'm sure they've already thought of that, and they'll be doing that once it's a little more demolished.
Sure.
But it is neat to check in once a day, not necessarily on the website, but you certainly can, KUGatewayDistrict.com. But there's many others on Twitter that are making this now their daily mission to drive over and take videos and pictures and all that. But the lower bowl area on both sides is completely, the lower part of it, completely cleared out, and they started to tackle the top of the structure that goes up toward the press box on the west side, the sides of that seating stand area. And so it's been wild. And I know for some Jayhawks fans longer in the tooth and the people that have been going there their entire lives, which technically includes us.
Sure.
We've been going there our entire lives. But, I mean, people that are maybe in their, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, it's been emotional to see that torn apart. But as Travis Goff said yesterday, while he loves the heart and the passion of Jayhawk fans to feel that way, there's also an excitement to just get that sucker down because it's so overdue and it's time to start competing with our Big 12 brethren and NCAA brethren with, you know, a more state-of-the-art facility. Our fans deserve it, our players deserve it, and you know, it's time. And so yes, there are some heavy hearts to see some places that so many great memories have been made for Jayhawk fans now be torn down, but at the same time really excited to think about what it could turn into. And so, yeah, there's a lot of talk right now about next season and preliminary talks on playing possibly in other venues. The plan all along has been to play with about a 45 to 55% capacity, somewhere in that 50% range, depending on where construction ends up settling at the time that the season's getting underway, which would put all the fans on the east side for the home games. And it would not be ideal, certainly. Your number would dwindle considerably for that one season. And that one season could feature a team that makes a run at the college football playoff. And so you'd hate to have that historic season be at half capacity, but it's just the way the timing's worked out. Could there be other, you know, scheduling changes in terms of venue? I suppose there could, but nothing that has been formalized or finalized by any means. And the plans that they've communicated all along involve keeping it in Lawrence, keeping it on campus, knowing what that means to the local business owners in terms of revenue on those six home weekends. And I think they'll continue to try to have an emphasis on that as much as possible. But yes, there's all kinds of talk right now going on out there. And I think in the meantime, until you get more of an update from Travis Goff on that, just know that they are full speed ahead on bringing us the most beautiful stadium that honestly will compete with anything in the Big 12 favorably once Texas is off to the SEC. I think it'll be better than what Baylor just unveiled 5 years ago. It'll be as nice as anything. So let's embrace that. And if there happens to be, you know, a change in plans here or there, what next season looks like, just roll with it, knowing that this is a transitional year. And then we really get to celebrate and raise a glass and enjoy something that's long overdue for this fan base and this campus for the University of Kansas.
I had an original question to ask you about why KU football has had just a few players enter the transfer portal. And this just came out within the hour that Gage Keyes said on Twitter, "I have entered the portal as a graduate transfer. Thank you for everything, Kansas. This has been the best year of my life. I'm proud to call KU my alma mater. We'll be a Jayhawk forever, and I appreciate every single one of you. So much love for you all." That's straight from his Twitter account. And Gage, of course, just one season at KU. He has two seasons of eligibility remaining. At his next school, I don't really want to talk about Gage specifically. That, if you want to, that's your decision there. But what I wanted to address is that – you know, in the transfer portal with NIL and everything else, we're basically seeing college football free agency, especially with quarterbacks, where they're just kind of doing a musical chair carousel type of thing. We saw Dylan Gabriel leave Oklahoma to go to Oregon. You know, K-State has, I think, 16 or 18 kids in the transfer portal. On average, I think it's 15 to 20 per school in Division I. There's over 2,000 athletes now already from football that have already entered the portal. But when you look at the list of those that have decided to enter the transfer portal, and I'm sure there's going to be more to come, and there'll probably be more for every single school in the Big 12. KU is at the lowest. I think the other day was only like maybe 2, 3, or 4. And we talked about this yesterday, Brian, that, you know, sometimes kids, everybody thinks that kids are choosing to enter the transfer portal on their own accord. There are times where coaches encourage them. Like, head on out, buddy, because you're not going to play here. We don't hold it against you. Maybe you want to enter the transfer portal. They're almost kind of nudged that direction. And there's also players that are flat out looking at opportunities with NIL if they're a really good player, in particular the position of quarterback. But what would you have to say about the transfer portal from the standpoint of why do you think KU's had – so few that have entered the portal, and then how does that affect in particular Kansas? Because for each team it's hard when you lose players. Sometimes kids have 1 year left, they've graduated, so forth and so on, but it's a whole different landscape than we had, say, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to keep an eye on, and in some cases fan bases will see the number escalate and they'll start to panic, and then you remember that probably more than half of those guys, the coaching staff was okay with leaving. It's kind of like when so many of the basketball team members left last spring. And honestly, gosh, I hate to say it, it's nothing personal against those guys, but, you know, maybe with one exception, you know, Kansas was okay with all of them moving on because, A, they want what's best for the kid, a chance to truly carve out a bigger role and be a more impactful player, and it wasn't happening at Kansas. I mean, you know, a couple months in, if a guy's going to cut it here or not. And so you'd much rather see a kid fulfilled and playing the role that he envisioned playing for himself than buried 10th, 11th, or 12th on a depth chart. I'm talking hoops right now. And so that was an example of, you know, everybody's like, oh my gosh, look at all this movement. Are we going to be okay? And obviously, while we wish we had one more player right now, probably, that's more to do with Arterio Morris's off-the-court stuff that happened in the fall. They thought they had the exact roster build and construct that they wanted. And I say that to say that, for example, our rivals to the West have had a very large number of portal guys, but while it's certainly concerning for fans, and that's understandable, I think a good amount of those players, Coach Kleiman's staff's probably okay with having the open scholarship spot and feels confident they can fill it with a better option, or at least as good of an option who's a better fit. So as it pertains to Kansas football, at the start of the week it was 2 compared to 14, 15, 18 in other Big 12 markets. And you ask why or how? Well, the culture, A, is really good. NIL initiatives have been really good. They continue to show these guys that it's the best fit for them, both from a football playing time and let's do something special together standpoint, but also we can help you with your brand and, you know, we can find marketing opportunities for you. They've done a really, you know, accelerated ahead of the pack type job, I think, compared to many other Big 12 brethren, which has allowed them to keep from being poached by some SEC schools like we've seen happen in other places. But I do think that there are more to come, just like Gage Keys today, and I did see that about an hour ago, and I love the way he handled it, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, praising Kansas, saying he'd always be a Jayhawk. He's so glad he got his degree from here. He's a terrific kid, and he genuinely loved his time here. I think for him it's about greater opportunity elsewhere, which could mean more playing time, could mean a little bigger piece of the NIL pie elsewhere because he wasn't going to be one of the featured guys necessarily. But yeah, I think there's a lot that goes into that. But the fact that Lance's number of current defections is so small has to make you feel good about the culture and the environment they've created here and the fact that next year's a season that everybody wants to be a part of, because look at that junior class again and how big a talent base it is, with basically every single offensive skill position player coming back as a senior next year. Guys like Mello and Kobe and, you know, Jeremy Robinson and Austin Booker, we all hope eventually come back. Some have announced already that they are. But, yeah, there's just a lot of momentum heading into next year that this would be a bad time to tap out unless you just felt like you were buried on the depth chart, had no chance to impact it, because next year has the feel of a potentially historic season here. So I think a lot of guys, that has to do with some of it there. So, you know, we'll see what the next few weeks look like. There's going to be more, as I said, but some of which you'll be okay with because, A, for the player, it's probably a better opportunity in terms of opportunity on the field, playing time, that is. But, B, it might open up Lance's staff with an opportunity to get somebody that'll be more impactful. And so when that happens, you're okay with it. And I think if you keep the numbers in the high single digits, you feel pretty good about that because that means you're returning a strong nucleus, but you're also giving enough opportunity still out there. And, you know, it's kind of like free agency now. And you know, you don't want to use the verb go shopping like, you know, professional free agency, but go selecting. And that's fun for a staff that has proven themselves in the last three seasons to be excellent talent evaluators, particularly in taking these mid-major players like Alani Phelps, for example. Now, Austin Booker came from Minnesota, but he was underutilized there. But taking these guys that haven't broken out yet and plugging them into major opportunities here and watching what it turns into, I like this staff in evaluating guys that are about to blow up. And I wouldn't mind giving them three or four extra scholarships to go out and do that. So some of these, what I'm getting at is, you're okay if they end up making the decision. But honestly, I'm proud that we haven't had that many defections because I think that really speaks to something special brewing here in Lawrence.
All right, time for the Off the Wall for Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency. I don't know if you saw this, but the other day, the University of Colorado has a course now called Primetime, Public Performance and Leadership, with the focus being on teaching student athletes how to best use their voices and platforms in the early stages of the name, image, and likeness era. It will not be taught by Professor Deion Sanders. It will be taught by a variety of media experts. I use this in air quotes. So my question for you along those lines, because Dusty was talking about this yesterday when we brought this up, you know, when you were ahead of schedule, maybe you had some college courses you took in high school, you had to kind of fill your whole schedule, and you had a throwaway class or a PUD class, an easy class, just to kind of fill out your schedule. Did you have one of those PUD classes or throwaway classes? And if so, what was maybe the easiest class you ever had to take just to kind of fill things out?
Well, that's a great question. And I put in a personal plug for a friend here. Mike Brown is a multi-time Emmy Award-winning cinematographer that was in charge of the latest Prime documentary on Prime, the Amazon channel. Check that out. I haven't watched it yet myself. I'm hoping to get into it next week when our schedule slows down a little bit. But that's a Jayhawk, the guy that caught the pass on the fake punt in the Orange Bowl.
Okay.
Remember that play, Brandon McAnderson and Michael Brown? He's now an amazing filmmaker, and he spent the entire season with Coach Prime, and I know has a lot of interesting things to say. So make sure you check that out. As far as PUD classes, for me, it was all HSES, which was the health and sports and sciences. I don't know what the E stood for, maybe exciting or ESPN or something. But exercise science.
There you go.
Exercise,
you got it.
Science, yes. Somebody was going to text in with that. But, yeah, for me, it was those only counted for one credit hour, not three, but you could take four of them over the course of your career. So I had bowling. I had racquetball. I had basketball, which, I mean, hey, we all knew how to play basketball,
sure.
But it was basically an excuse to run up and down the floor at Robinson Gymnasium. And, you know, when you could say you took basketball to a place that, you know, had the coach that invented basketball, that's a pretty good thing, right?
Yes.
And I think maybe golf was my other one. I can't remember the fourth one. But the point is, those classes were just sign up to go play sports or bowl or racquetball or whatever for an hour. And you do it two or three times a week, and then you collect your A at the end of the semester. And it was a blast. Mm-hmm. And you know, my personal bowling career high happened at Jayhawk Lanes at the Union because of that class. I think I had a 212. And yeah, I became a pretty above average racket player because of it. So it's funny. There's other classes I took that were much more studious and academic, and I couldn't tell you the first thing about what I learned 20 years ago in those classes. But I've got a pretty wicked forehand on the racquetball court as a result of that HSES class.
And you still remember your high bowling score. That's great. That's awesome.
You got to remember your career day, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you remember. That stands out like a sore thumb or, you know, whatever the case may be. And that obviously you learned something because your bowling improved. Your bowling ability improved, obviously, by taking the class. So it was not a complete throwaway, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I wish I had that class when I was in college. I did not. All right, man. Well, have a good call. Safe travels up to Bloomington, Indiana. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, buddy. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to each and every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.